your horoscope and eat some hors d'oeuvres. 10 on pump one, these hoes is self-serve. 757-410s, my cell phone just overload.
I've got hoes. I've got hoes.
I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is Your Damn Right. We discussed the week in television. This week we'll be talking The Leftovers, Scream Queens, American Horror Story, Empire, and Fargo. Give us a like, comment, share, subscribe. You know, the things you're supposed to do if you like a podcast. If you don't like us, just comment and tell us why you don't like us. That's okay. Like, we take the comment, really. Ash, let's get into 10-13, this week's episode of The Leftovers. Initial impression.
I thought it was really good. I was glad that they did switch, even though it was left on a cliffhanger last week. Switching back over to, because I was wondering, like, what is up with, you know, Tommy, his mom.
You were.
Yeah, I was, because they had, like, one episode, and they keep talking about, like, you know, where's Tommy? I would like to know what the fuck happened to Tommy.
See, I'm glad I didn't know what this episode was about, because I did really enjoy it. But if you had told me beforehand, like, it's just going to be an episode about Meg and Tommy, I would have been like, nah, fuck that. I don't have any interest. But, you know, an expression people, you know, when they're reviewing TV talk about sometimes is mining for story. And what they mean is, like, searching on the margins of the main storyline. So, Kevin is our main character, more or less. And we followed the Garveys and the Murphys for most of the season. And they're what's been going on in Jardin, Texas for most of the season. But while all that was going on, like, this is the epitome of mining for story. And Fargo does it, too, we'll talk about it. Like, on the edges of the main story, this week we sort of explore what's been happening with, like, these background characters. I mean, before this week, I couldn't have told you anything about Meg other than, like, that she was crazy and in the Guilty Remnant. Like, those were literally the only things I knew about her. So, they really tried to fill out this character who's apparently going to be a big part of the finale.
Yeah.
I was also wondering how we were going to get two more episodes out of this season, because I just knew that, like, the next episode, John and Kevin were, like, going to go at it, and knowing John's character, it didn't seem like that was, you know, likely to end well. So I was wondering, like, is that going to be the episode before the finale? But no, it's going to be the finale.
Give me a blowout. Literally, whatever Meg's planning on doing. That's crazy.
You know what threw me, though, was, like, the double swerve in the storytelling. Okay, so the initial swerve, I was ready for that. Okay, so the climax of this episode is really toward the end, which is a little odd, but the climax of the episode is basically Tommy searching for what is, for what the audience has sort of been led to believe is a bomb, something being hidden out in the trailer. And I was kind of thinking, I was like, it's going to be the girls. But what I was not expecting was that when the doors opened, the girls would be like full-on Guilty Remnant members.
That threw the hell out of me. I was like, oh, shit. I thought, you know, and I still wonder, like, did Meg, like, kidnap them first, or was it?
I don't know.
I don't know. That shit is.
Well,
I mean,
Evie and her friends seem like. This is why I kind of think they have to have been brainwashed, but it also could be the argument against it, which is weird. But they were such, like, free-spirited people, like, and they were, you know, they were running through the woods, like, happy and naked, and singing and telling jokes, and they seemed like pretty happy teenagers who were, if anything, probably a little too out of control. Like, the last thing they seemed likely to do was join this button-down cult, which is all about depression and the world ending. I mean, Do teenagers join crazy cults without being brainwashed first?
I don't know. Because I felt like it had to be brainwashed. I mean, like you said, you know, they was like very free teenagers, you know, and they weren't suffering from whatever they was suffering. I wouldn't be surprised if they, like, you know, got kidnapped and then brainwashed or whatever. Because Meg doesn't seem to be one who goes through protocols of the rest of the Guilty Rooted.
And so, on Meg's side of things, if your mission statement is the world has ended, like, why are there rules? Why do you have to follow? Yeah. Why would anybody follow protocols if you believe that, like, basically everything, existence has come to an end? The absurdity of that is, you know, bizarre. That, oh, the world ended, but I have to stop at the red light. Like, what?
It's an interesting, you know, side to what she said. And I knew, I figured something had to be up. Like, when they showed the way to, her fashion of the Guilty Revenue, you know, the things that they were doing, I was like, they weren't doing these types of things, you know. At least we didn't see them do these types of things, you know, in the first season. So, like, what switched up? It was Meg. Meg is the one that switched shit up. So, it makes a lot more sense now, like, what happened with the things that, you know, trying to literally drag people back into the Guilty Revenue when they wanted to break free and stuff like that. So, yeah, this episode, you know, made things a lot more sense.
One thing that's nice about The Leftovers this year is, like, the two main Guilty Remnant, or really the three main Guilty Remnant members from last season, which were Patty, Meg, and Lori, are all back, but they all talk now.
Yeah.
So, like, we basically dropped the note, like, it's still in the storyline, but we don't have to sit around with characters who don't talk anymore, which is nice. And I like Meg just going out to people, like, it's okay, talk, just say it.
Yeah.
I don't have time for you to write things down. This is ridiculous. I don't know though. I understand what sort of to the degree I understand the Guilty Remnant. I understand why Meg is going to do what she's going to do. But what we were talking about, there is really no logical point where we can connect the dots for Evie yet, and hopefully we'll get there. I would have enjoyed an episode this season, and maybe we'll get one in the future more from Evie's point of view. Like, she's essentially like a MacGuffin this season. She is what the plot is hinging around in every direction, but we don't know much about her other than, like, she's a girl who has epilepsy.
Yeah. And I find, she feels like an interesting character to me. It's like, her personality alone, like, when she walked up to Meg and was like, you know, saw her crying and, like, offered, he was like, you can't cry and eat a baby carrot at the same time, pretty much. Like, what?
Yeah. No, that was, like, a big hint to the audience that, like, the girls were going to come up again because Evie was in this episode. So, like, the first episode she's been in a while, and she had met Meg earlier. You know, what did you think about... Is Tommy following Meg because he's just got, like, a mommy complex? Is that sort of what I'm understanding?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. You know, the thing that bothered me that he was following this woman around after she, you know, raped and, like, tried to, you know, threaten to kill him and, you know, and everything. It was sketchy, but, like, I don't know, it just felt weird. I mean, I kind of understand, but it also felt, like, weird, and it also, you know, kind of
apparently he liked it. I mean,
it was
he's into it, so that's good. Like, not advocating for rape or anything, but it's better when he's into it.
Yeah, but it was weird. Like, it kind of felt kind of fucked up because it kind of feeds the trope that, like, you know, a woman can't rape a man. It's like, it kind of fed off that trope a little bit, you know, in a way. It's like, this should be...
Well, let me just say this, without trying to get too much into the issue of a woman raping a man. Like, it seemed really easy for her to quote-unquote rape Tommy. He seemed like he was pretty into it as soon as it started.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she might have forced him into initiating it, but as soon as she did, he was just, like, going with it. It's good.
Yeah. It's still kind of fucked up, though. I kind of wish they didn't go down that route. At least, like, I don't know. Because it's still like now he likes her. It's like, this woman raped you, too. Do you not
I can't understand
like,
if he wants her as, like, a girlfriend or a mother figure or both. I don't know. I think it is. I think like, it's supposed to feel fucked up. It's like they don't have a healthy relationship, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions for the finale?
I don't know what Meg is exactly she going to do. Like she says she wants to pretty much destroy Miracle. Which is, you know, it's pretty much like the gate to Jordan, which is, you know, kind of like, you know.
Well, the only way they're getting in is through the girls. So, like, the girls are obviously the key to whatever her plan is, and my guess would just be, like, mass suicide or suicide bombing or something with the girls. I mean, I can't imagine what else it could be at this point. I could be totally off base, but... You know, you have these girls who are not trying to get away and are being held in the secret compartment, you know, the secret little trailer by this cult, and they're all cool there. It feels like we're going toward, like, mass teenage suicide. I don't know.
Or you could have Matt probably, you know, give someone a heads up or something, because he knows something's up.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what, and even if he wanted to, how would he?
Yeah, that's true.
I guess he could, like, tell Nora, but it's not like anybody's going to listen to Matt, or not Matt, Kevin and Nora right now. They're not, they're both, you know.
Fighters.
An extreme amount now that, like, Kevin's handprint has probably been
this is on the damn,
I don't even know where Nora is, by the way. I'm not sure. You know, she's not with Kevin, she's not with Matt. I don't know, like, where could she be staying? I guess possibly with, maybe throwing rocks through each other's window really brought her and Erica together.
Oh, gosh, I mean, yeah, because we haven't really seen her either, so, yeah, this is, that'd be an interesting twist.
One thing I would compare Fargo and The Leftovers for a moment, like, we get this episode of Fargo this week, that did a really, really nice job of also operating in the fringes, like I talked about, like finding story in the backstory. But the one thing I'd say Fargo did a lot better with that than The Leftovers, and I thought this was an admirable episode about The Leftovers, but I have a really clear idea of the time and place everything is happening in Fargo. While this is happening over in the main story, like, crazy-ass Peggy is stabbing this guy. While this is happening, this is happening. I'm not sure when events are always happening in The Leftovers. Like, the timeline is sort of loose. It's just not as neat or clean as it could be. And maybe that's by design, because this show doesn't like us to feel satisfied almost. But it does sometimes feel a little uneven. All right, I really did enjoy this episode, though, surprisingly so. And I will give props to The Leftovers on this. I saw a poll on The Leftovers chat on Facebook, which was fucking insane because it asked who the best character was. And guess who the number one response was?
Kevin.
I was just like, Kevin? My face was probably like Patty's, like, fucking Kevin? But the only three people with any significant number of responses were Patty, Kevin, and Nora. And this episode didn't feature them at all. Like, the three best characters, according to the fans, are not on the episode at all. And neither are the Murphys. And they had, like, a complete... really solid episode of television without involving any of their main or most interesting characters, which very few television shows are capable of. We talk about, like, Empire. It's a thing. It's a thing only really good shows are capable of. Can you imagine Empire having, like, an entire episode of Anika? I mean, it might be interesting, but they're not going to fucking try it, and if they did, it might be terrible.
Not the Nika they running with now. I wouldn't watch that.
It'd probably just be like a stalker episode.
Yeah.
All right. We have one more week of the leftovers. Did we miss anything, Ash?
No, I think we covered it. Pretty much, we glossed over Meg's her backstory.
Yeah, with her mom. I wasn't clear on whether this means the fingerprint guy was legit, but he seemed pretty fucking legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, join us next week. Next up, we're going to talk about Scream Queens and American Horror Story. So I lost the Chumbawamba, Ash. I had some Chumbawamba ready for Scream Queens, and like my internet's fucking up and my computer's fucking up, so we just don't have Chumbawamba. Are you going to be okay?
I'll be
all right. All right. But, you know, the thing is that if you get knocked down, you get up again, and they're never going to keep you down. And that's the important thing about Chumbawamba. What did you think about Black Friday? I mean, the Scream Queens episode, not the retail sale.
I thought it was pretty good. You know, it's definitely leading up to, you know, who's the killer and everything. But I thought it was a pretty good episode. Chanel tried to, be a badass and try to stay confront the Red Devil killer and everything.
I really liked Chanel in this episode even more than usual. I don't know why, but the way she says bitch is just like my favorite thing on the show right now. There was this one time when Zayday was, she was like, and naming the people all the Red Devil killed, and she was like, Miss Bean. And Zayday was like, you killed Miss Mean. And she was like, I didn't turn on the frying pan, bitch. It's like the emphasis she puts on that. But yeah, Chanel's just like badassery, and Denise Hempfield becoming the new like head of police. Those are the highlights for me. I know Zayday is screwed now that Denise is the head of police. Like, Zayday's getting arrested tomorrow.
Yeah, poor Zayday. First she was like on the outs because everyone was like, we're going to poison Dean Munch. She's like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, what are you doing? He's like, can we at least have some evidence that she actually did it? But then she switches and, you know.
Okay. What if she switches because she is, because Denise Hempfield is on her trail now, and she's trying to kill a few more people before she gets taken down? It's possible. Maybe she's trying to, you know, convince the other girls that she's not really the Red Devil killer. Maybe Denise Hempfield is on to something.
Maybe.
For some reason, I was not nearly as surprised as I was supposed to be. I think that Diego Boneta's character, whatever his name is one of the killers. I was just like, figures.
But I was wondering if the sister, is she so, the Red, the Boone's half-sister, the Red Devil.
There's still one more unidentified killer, apparently.
Yeah, I was wondering if it could be the girl in the first episode that got sprayed or whatever in her.
I guess it could be. I don't think she's dead. I don't see why not. It would be a little odd that she was like the head of the sorority, but I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, just throwing that out there.
I kind of think it's the father. So it'll be like the last episode is called The Last Girl, and like nonsensically it's going to come down to Grace, and it's going to be Grace dealing with her boyfriend the killer and her father the killer. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, that was
I it's not what I'm hoping for. Like, it is called The Last Girl, so I'm hoping The Last Girl is either Chanel or Chanel 3, but it's probably Grace. Grace is probably...
She fits the trope.
Yep, she does. We talk a lot about how episodes are formatted sometimes. As the way seasons are formatted, would this have been better as... I don't know, what is the ideal way this story could have been told for you? Like, how short or long should it have been?
I guess it could have.
Could it have been a movie?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it could have been. It could have been a movie.
Like, if you slice off all the excess fat and all the redundant parts, and just like put out like the best 120 minutes of Scream Queens as like one feature film, like, would it have been significantly better than the experience we got over what's going to be, I think, 13 episodes?
I mean, we would have, well, you know, missed out on a lot of comedy stuff, you know, considering, you know, it's a comedy horror. But I think so. I think or could have just been split into two different movies.
Yeah, I mean, it could have easily been a miniseries, like a 4 or 5 hour miniseries.
Yeah.
But that is not the way Ryan Murphy operates. He's got a third series coming, by the way. Are you in or out on American Crime Story?
I think I'm in.
I'm in. Like, against my better judgment, I'm already in. Because I'm, like, watching these trailers, and I'm like, that looks fucking awesome. I can't wait to be disappointed.
That's the problem. It's like, what if it's not as good as it should be?
But, I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr., John Travolta, I mean, Sarah Paulson, it's an impressive list of actors they've gathered together. And
yeah,
that is a very rich story. And it's something that's not going to be hard to make work. I just hope it doesn't end in, like, OJ realizing he's been a serial killer all along while the audience has to sit through it for a while.
Oh, gosh.
Do you have any take on how the employers, or I guess the city officials, could have possibly given Denise Hempfield a job? Like, what could that interview have been like? So you're a security guard, I get it. And you've been camping out at this sorority house for a few weeks, and all the members have basically died while you've been there. And you've yet to do anything to apprehend this person that we fired all our people for not catching. You got the job.
Pretty much. Dude, what she finds is like, I know who the killer is. Give me a couple days to get the evidence.
It's Zayday Williams. Yeah. One of my favorite things they've done, though, Scream Queens, is just, like, completely abuse the one cliche of, like, the cop letting the killer get away. Denise just, like, always doing the most outrageous shit.
Yeah.
Why did I talk so much? I don't...
Yeah, I love when they do stuff like that.
I'm glad that Denise is back in that role for the last couple episodes, though. I don't know, like, the middle of the season, she got lost, and then she came back as, like, the den mother who wanted to be Chanel, and I guess we just completely abandoned that, which I'm fine with, because it was fucking crazy. any more thoughts on Scream Queens?
How strong being munches.
Rasputin shit, man. Rasputin shit. I'm buying it. I'm sure we're going to get some, like, cockamine, crazy-ass story about why she was able to survive everything. But I kind of hope they just leave it as it is. Just, like, she's fucking unkillable, okay? I'm a little sad we didn't get to see Chanel and the Chanel try to drown her. That would have been a fun scene.
Yeah. I totally thought, like, Demos, like, soon Chanel brought up, like, the chains and stuff, the chains got brought up, like...
I thought we could talk about bondage.
I was like, you were talking to the wrong one. Miss Kinky herself. Like, I'm pretty sure she knows a lot about that. I thought she was going to kiss Chanel for a second.
Really? No, I think she kind of understood what was happening the whole time. Like, I got the impression she understood they were trying to kill her. She just somehow knew they weren't going to be able to.
I realized, but when she, like, walked up to us, like, being much is
kind of
like because I'm like a sexual predator. So I was like,
the only reason I would say she's not full on sexual predator is because she was sort of being predatory with Chad, and Chad is a predator himself. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Speaking of Chad, I guess I should mention one of maybe my favorite Chad scene other than the goat scene all year was when he challenged what's his head to a duel. Pick your weapon. We're gonna fight to the death. Was, of course you are,
What?
Chad. Just get some golf clubs out and bash each other in the head. That would be good television.
Chad is so ridiculous. I don't know why I love him so much, because he's so ridiculous.
Oh, and he's so like open. He's completely cool with being how ridiculous he is. He's just like, yeah, you know, I think it's unethical for you to ask me to have sex with fewer women. That's terrible. What's... I have a companion goat. So from that, which was pretty entertaining, if light, to the very heavy, very unentertaining, in my opinion, Ten Commandments killer. Do you have a better, do you have a nicer or better take on this than I do?
I'm glad we got some backstory, but you know how he became the Ten Commandments killer. But it was like, I hope it wasn't supposed to be like a shock to the audience that he was the Ten Commandments killer.
Hope not,
It's
because you
like,
mentioned it like after the second episode. You were like, and I was like, no, that can't be right. And then like after one more episode, I was like, yeah, that's right.
it was. I don't know, it just felt like glaring, it was like so glaringly obvious that this dude was a Ten Commandments killer. And he
Hey, let me call it. So, Ash, how did you feel about whatever the fuck this week's title was? So Fargo. It was weird. I can't remember. Something like Lulput or no,
I don't know. But I thought it was a great episode. You know, usually, you know, when you know, they do bottle episodes or some because they're just a certain group of people. I was glad, and then they go back and show what happened. I was glad the way, you know, they did it, you know, and so we, like you said earlier, you know, we can piece together the timeline very easily with what they did.
I really appreciated this episode of Fargo. It's actually I don't know if this will hold up for very long, but right now it's the highest scored episode the series has had on IMDb, so a lot of people really like this episode. I thought one thing it did brilliantly was Mike Milligan sort of espoused earlier this year how like the politeness in Fargo isn't real. Like people aren't really nice, they just pretend to be. That's just sort of how they act, it's not who they are. I thought nothing was like better at showcasing that than Peggy. Like in her delusional state, she's like stabbing Dodd, and she's like, "Would you like some beans? I'm cooking. Would you like me to be?" And she's being like very polite while she's torturing him. It's just great. And my favorite scene in the entire episode was Dodd like being tied to the chair when the butcher comes back, and he's like, "Help me, please. She's crazy." And she is. She is crazy as fuck. What did you think about Hanzi this episode?
I really enjoyed him. I really did. I was glad that we, you know, got more of him because, you know, he's kind of been like a figure on this show, you know.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he works for the family. He's part of the family, but not part of the family, you know. So I'm glad we got more in, you know, him comes to this point where he's just like, you know, I want out, you know, just cut my, can you
Yeah.
cut my hair? But it was like, I want out.
There's this type of Coen's character. There's one in, there's one obviously in No Country for Old Men. There's another in the Coen's film starring John Turturro in the early 90s, or he's like a writer in Hollywood. I can't remember the name of it. But where there's just like this unstoppable killer character, and he can be a character outside of that, but he's like a force of nature. He's like Brock Lesnar in the WWE. He's not necessarily a good guy or a bad guy. He's just going around fucking destroying people. That's sort of who Hanzi is, man. Like, I don't know what those guys at the bar were thinking. Other, I mean, they're being assholes, but the guy just told you he was like a decorated war vet. Like, did you think it was gonna end well when you went out to pick a fight?
That was super dumb. And like he's, and I'm mad to do like straight up spit in his water, like he won't be able to see this glop of spit in his damn glass. It's like,
I mean, that was a shitty... The guy was shitty to him. I don't think he was any more shitty than the other guy. I don't know why he got killed and the other guys only got shot in the leg. I feel like he should have killed them all.
Yeah. I guess because he started it.
Yeah. It was his bar, maybe. I don't know. A writer named Chris Ryan threw out this idea earlier this week that this show has as many big unanswered questions as The Leftovers. How do you feel about that?
I don't think it's unanswered questions.
Well, he pointed back to the UFOs and Ted Danson's room with all the drawings that we know. And he was said we were unclear on whether Peggy was crazy or not, which I don't really buy. Like, she's fucking delusional. she's touched. She's a little touched. But yeah.
There's only been really been one episode since, you know, the reveal of Ted Danson's character, his room. You know, that happened last week. So I thought they was going to pick it, but until I realized, like, this was a bottle episode. So I wouldn't be surprised if it picks back up.
This all happened, like, in a way that last conversation he has with Bokeem Woodbine, with Mike Milligan, it means is so much cooler now than it was last week when he had it. Not that it wasn't cool last week, but knowing both sides of like the what was going on and then seeing them come together, such a neat little thing. There's so much to like here. There's so little. The economy of Fargo is amazing. There's so little wasted, so few wasted scenes. So little wasted dialogue. I mean, no wasted episode. This episode could have easily been a throwaway episode, but it was so rich. And, I mean, I thought it might be a throwaway episode when it started. I was like, oh, we'll get, like, some tales of Hanzi and Peggy.
Yeah.
But, like, it was really, really, I mean, good and really drew these characters out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely agree.
So, we have two episodes of Fargo left, and we're headed to a big showdown. How do you see this playing?
Yeah.
In this universe, Fargo universe, Coen's universe, sort of, like, stupid people tend to die. And I don't feel like either one of them are that smart, especially Peggy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you surprised at all that Hanzi Kiel died and not Peggy and the Butcher? Did it have the intended effect on you? Were you very surprised when Dodd died?
I wasn't surprised. Although it did catch you off guard for like a split second. It was like, but I kind of saw, not necessarily saw it coming. Like, you kind of see like a little bit like Hanzi was just like, he was just getting tired a bit.
Yeah.
But, and not the way, and besides the way, you know, Dodd's an asshole. Like, he even treats, you know, Hanzi kind of like shit. You know? So, like, sure. I was surprised.
He treats him entirely, like, the entire time. And that's why, like, we get the scene and, like, Hanzi shows up and he just keeps talking. And, like, the longer he talks, I'm like, oh, he's going to kill Dodd. He's definitely going to kill. I didn't know if he was going to kill Dodd and the Peggy and her husband, but he was definitely going to kill Dodd.
Yeah.
And he probably would have killed Peggy and her husband, but he ran out of bullets. Such is the way of things.
Oh, he just wanted a haircut.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he just got through murdering a bunch of people, and he's on the run, and they are the only person who's going to know about his new haircut. I feel like he would have killed him.
Oh.
You sound so disappointed. Anything else about Fargo?
No.
Okay. I guess it's time for Winners of the Week. We need to come up with a better name than that. Do you have any suggestions?
I don't know.
All right, guys, if you're out there, give us a name that is better than Winners of the Week. It's a little alliterative, and it's accurate, but I don't know, something a little more catchy. Ash, who's your best actor this week?
I'm going to go with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, okay. Tell us why.
I just enjoy, you know, the character Peggy this episode. I mean, I've enjoyed her before, but the way, you know, Kirsten Dunst was playing her this episode, the way, like, she's just spiraling into the, her own, like, delusion.
Yeah.
And it was, like, just torturing Dodd, but still being polite about it. It was, I just loved every bit of it.
I kind of agree with you, but just to be different, I'm going to say Jesse Plemons, the Butcher of Laverne. There's so many little things he does in his mannerisms, and like he acts the hell out of those scenes in the phone box. Like that's hard to do, yeah. Man. Like he's not playing off of anybody. There's nothing else to do. He's sitting in a box talking on an extinct form of technology, and he's acting the hell out of that. And I think it's really great that everybody involved in Fargo seems to give like 110% and really try to do something special. Even the actors who are just like Nick Offerman or Jesse Plemons, who are probably considered supporting characters, like they treat this like this is the role of a lifetime. And I mean, they're really going all in.
Everyone's really good on this show.
Yep. Best scene of the week?
Scene of the week. I'm going to go with...
with the boardroom meeting in Empire, right?
Gosh, hell no. I'm going to go with the scene with Cookie and Lucius when he was shooting up his stuff and
really?
The way he just broke down. Yeah, I thought it was like the chemistry between the two actors. And you actually kind of felt for Lucius at that point. You know, he just lost everything. And Cookie was there, to hold him, you know.
I'm going to stay with our Fargo theme. And, man, my favorite scene, not just this week, maybe this year, was the scene where, like, Peggy was alone with Dodd. And she was just, like, stabbing the shit out of him. And, like, seemed completely oblivious to, like, she's, like, slowly killing him. Like, you're going to be nice now? Okay, that's why. I mean, it was hilarious and crazy and just, like... So weird all at the same time. It made perfect sense. I can't say it any better than that. It was fantastic. I loved it so much. I rewound it and watched it again. Episode of the week?
Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo. I mean, it's pretty. 10-13 was good.
Yeah.
Black Friday wasn't bad, but yeah, Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo definitely takes it.
Soapbox time, Ash? Ooh. That was one of those like American Horror Story groans there.
It was the mid-season finale for The Walking Dead.
How'd that go?
I had to say it was kind of disappointing. I mean, they had a lot of good stuff in it, but I felt that, I don't know, like the episode was cut for time or whatever. Like they've had episodes, like I think there was episode, to me it felt like it was originally supposed to be like an hour and a half, or maybe even a two-hour mid-finale. But they cut it to, like, and they've had episodes like that before, like, for the premiere or for a finale or something like that. But, you know, it felt really short.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just felt oddly paced. And I really think they did cut it, because there was promotional pictures where that wasn't even in the show, like, with characters that was, I guess they was originally supposed to be in the episode, but they weren't. So I guess they were saving it for, you know, the mid-season premiere. And it was left on a big cliffhanger. But I did enjoy those scenes with the character, the leader of the Alexandria Safe Zone, Deanna. She died. But she, as she died, she gave out a lot of wisdom to, you know, the character Rick on how, you know, how he should be a leader to this community. And it's not
It's always nice when somebody's dying to drop some wisdom.
Yeah, I love it. It was some really good scenes. It was the best part of the episode, especially with her and the character Michonne. Michonne's my favorite character, and she's been kind of underused, even though she's a fan favorite. She's been pretty underused for, like, the past season, past couple seasons. But she dropped some real wisdom on her. It was like, what do you want? Because Michonne is a character who's trying to make sure everyone else is okay. And as Deanna's dying, you know, she pretty much passed on her legacy of this community onto Michonne and, like, asked her the question, like, what do you want for you, you know, for herself? Because no one really asks her, like, what do you ask her what she wants. She's usually doing that you know, for other people, you know, make sure everyone else is okay. So, yeah, looking forward to, you know, her story moving forward, you know, some Michonne stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I hope that's, like, the entire episode, the first part of the two-part Scream Queens finale. It's, like, characters dying and dropping wisdom. I hope that, like, when Chanel dies, she just, like, instead of dropping wisdom, just drops, like, a six-minute pipe bomb on, like, how awful all the other characters are. And, like, Chanel 5's vagina teeth, like that, too. I need to hear more. Need more backstory on the teeth vagina.
Yeah, it's like, what is that?